$1.3 billion will buy a lot of ice. That's how much Frozen made after its release in 2013. The film also gave Disney princess fans two new favorites in sisters Anna and Elsa. It made a star out of Olaf the Talking Snowman, and there was something else.
Yes, Frozen gave the world one of Disney's most indelible ballads, and statistics say a young child is probably belting it out right now within a one-mile radius of you. Now the band is back together for Frozen 2, which finds Anna and Elsa on yet another adventure. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're chilling out with Frozen 2 on today's Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Glenn is culture editor for the New York Times, Aisha Harris. Hi, Aisha.
Hello.
We're so excited to have you. And also with us is NPR Music's Lindsay McKenna. Hi, Lindsay.
Hey there.
Such a pleasure to have both of you. I know you were both super psyched to join us. Before we get too far into it, let me explain a little bit about the new movie. A lot of it has to do with the relationship between Arendelle, which is the kind of Scandinavian kingdom where Anna and Elsa live, and a nearby indigenous tribe, basically, that's based in the woods. And the sisters are investigating the history of that relationship and how it's soured. And at the same time, Elsa is on a sort of separate quest to discover the origins of a mysterious singing voice that she can hear. Olaf is still with them. Kristoff is still Anna's boyfriend. And Sven is still the funny, funny reindeer. I'm going to start with you, Glenn. When we reviewed Frozen back in 2013, mm-hmm. I was the only one who liked it.
Right.
I still am very proud of that. Mm-hmm. What did you think of Frozen 2?
Yes, Stephen and I didn't get Frozen 1 until it saturated the culture, and then we kind of came around on it, I think. I want to address two criticisms. One that's going to come from people listening to this, which is what we always get when we talk about a kid's movie, which is, it's a kid's movie, why are you wasting time? It's not for you. I would say that to be a good kid's movie, it also has to be a parent's movie.
Yeah.
And if it's a musical, it has to survive the gay uncle, you know, show tune test. So it's a movie for everybody. Let's just stipulate that. Sure. The other thing is, this is what I'm hearing and reading a lot in the critical reaction to this film. A surprising number of the reviews start off by saying this film is unnecessary, which is not a hot take. It is the coldest of takes, because that's not the question.
Most movies are unnecessary.
This is the thing. The only question that matters is, does this film justify its existence? Is there enough in here to justify it? And I would say that for me, personally, between the songs, the jokes, and the set pieces, yeah, for me, there was enough to justify its existence. Now, I want to hear from other folks, but I also want to talk in some depth about the song Into the Unknown, yeah, because I have thoughts.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that. I want to come back to Into the Unknown. I want to get over to you, Aisha. What'd you think of Frozen 2?
It was entertaining. I will give it that. There are different ways you can take a sequel. There's the, we're going to just basically take the same template of the first movie and do a carbon copy. Each character in the first movie will have like a parallel character. In this one, they're new. And there's like that spin on it. And mm-hmm. thankfully, Frozen 2 doesn't really do that too much. It sort of keeps with those core characters while adding a few new ones. There's no like Hans in this movie, for example.
Right.
So I appreciated that. But overall, the music to me really fell far off the mark.
Forgettable, right?
Yeah, except for Into the Unknown, which yeah. I realize we're going to get back to.
Yeah.
But like every other song, especially the first couple of songs that are these sort of like reintroducing us to this mm-hmm. world, every character is singing in a nice chorus. As soon as it started, I was like, oh, this is not hitting it for me in the same way that like Do You Want to Build a Snowman mm-hmm. and Love is an Open Door. Like you can just name off all of the songs from Frozen that are excellent, and here there's like one or two that are actually kind of memorable and will stick with you afterwards.
Yeah, and it's the same songwriters. It's Bobby Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez, and they are very talented. But I agree with you. I think the music was pretty forgettable in this one. And I also, like, I was distracted by how much the Olaf the Snowman song sounds like Kansas City from Oklahoma. But Lindsay, tell me what you thought of Frozen 2.
I agree with everyone on the music note. But one thing that was really striking to me, I went back, rewatched the first Frozen just to get a sense of what to expect going into this and remind myself. And visually, this was so much more beautiful than the first, which maybe I'm not sure if that speaks to advances in animation. 2013 to 2019 isn't a huge gap, but mm-hmm. wow, it was really beautiful. And I think that one thing that was striking is you can see how the pivotal scenes for Elsa would be really, really beautiful for children.
Yeah.
That I could see that being really captivating just with the colors and with the special effects. That said, one thing that really fell flat for me was that the plot felt super convoluted.
That's mm-hmm. what I thought.
Yep.
There were like four different plot lines happening, and maybe one of them could be cut. I also couldn't help but think a little bit about Pocahontas and then Terrence Malick's The New World. And
yes.
that's like a sidebar, yeah, and I don't want to have that conversation. But I would say that Frozen, for an animated kids film, it did a really good job, I think, of like subverting what you've come to expect that mm-hmm. Disney has set up for all of these decades about what happens when a prince comes, happily ever after, etc.
Yeah.
That didn't happen in Frozen. That's why I loved it. That's why it really stuck out for me. Do I love the occasional joke at the ex-boyfriend's expense? Yes, that was a great little Disney aside.
Hans, who was Anna's potential love interest in the first movie before he turned out to be a terrible person.
Yep, and I don't think you've ever seen that in a Disney film, but I just wish that there was one less plot line.
Yeah, I really appreciated the fact that they still are really mostly focused on the relationship between the sisters. That's still the central love story of the Frozen movies. And that was true in the first one, kind of explicitly. That was sort of part of the point of it. And that's still true here, which means Kristoff, who is voiced by Jonathan Groff, gets really one song. And that's kind of his big moment. I think it's very funny. I want to listen to just a little bit of tape from that song. I don't know what path you lost in the woods. It's that little right at the end when you hear that little Peter Cetera,
Night Ranger
era Chicago little lick at the end. That's the joke of that song. It's all set up like a 70s/80s music video. Uh-huh. And I think as such, it's really funny. But other than that, Kristoff is kind of off to the side, which I think is not necessarily a bad thing. I do agree with Lindsay. I mean, every time we do this, we have people who say my 4-year-old understood it fine. And there are definitely kids who will have no trouble following this story, but I did think, especially the Elsa side of the story, where she's their spirits and stuff like that, is a little too complicated. It wasn't really totally clear what was going on. And Lindsay also made mention of the kind of Pocahontas idea. I was really fascinated by the fact that they were trying to do a story about kind of, as I said, the relationship between Arendelle and this group of people, this population that lives sort of close to nature and in the woods. And they're clearly trying to draw all kinds of parallels between the treatment of indigenous people by colonizing forces and stuff like that. There's about a 5-minute period where I thought this movie was going to be a really daring movie, and they do veer away from that. But I still think what they're trying to do has some value. I think there's some stuff in here about dealing with history of violations of people's sort of basic humanity and questioning the historical things that you've been taught. I think some of those things are really valuable. It just felt overdetermined to me. And I wound up sort of respecting the movie more than I loved it.
Right.
And I think some of the jokes work, but maybe not quite enough of the jokes. I wanted more funny reindeer. I just got a little bit gummed up in the Elsa side of the story.
I agree. Because as everybody was saying, it's admirable that this film doesn't want to just recapitulate Frozen 1. And what it's doing is it's trying to admit nuance and certainly more almost adolescent emotions of grief and guilt and, you know, and it's going back to question certain basic assumptions from the first film. That's all great. But what you end up with in execution, especially when it comes to Elsa's, you know, the source of her magic, is just more lore.
Yeah.
As a nerd, I'm looking at it going, oh, I know what you're doing. You're just loading this up with more stuff
lore
to keep track of. And if it felt like it grew out of her emotional journey to find a place of her own and be, you know, on her own, that would be great. Now, what do you guys think of this? This film is not a film where the character of Anna, who is, let's agree, kind of the more basic of the sisters. She is love drunk. She is the typical Disney princess who gets infatuated and is seen to be something of a fool, while Elsa is otherworldly and, you know, in my personal opinion, she should maybe find a lesbian and settle down. It's never going to happen. You know it's not going to happen. You kind of are pulling for it. But it does seem that Anna's character is, yes, it's a strong relationship between the two sisters, but it does seem that Anna's isn't really there for herself. She's just kind of there for her sister. So does her kind of not being a rounded character because she's so about her sister, is that fundamentally better than her being not a rounded character because she's so into a prince?
That's a good quote. What do you think, Aisha?
Well, you know, I came to the realization that Anna was super basic when I saw Frozen on Broadway, because I realized that, like, Elsa has the better song. She is the character who has the power, like the magic powers. And so I do find, even though Anna is very basic, I do find their dynamic very interesting because it feels very true in the sense of, like, you know, if you have ever had a sibling and if you're the younger one and the older one is like the one who has like done everything, they're like the perfect child to your parents. And, like, you just kind of got to sit there and be like, what can I do? Like, how do I contribute? Like, I feel like that was really interesting to see that dynamic play out throughout the film. And I also don't think she was that interested in Kristoff, because one of the five other side plots of the movie is that Kristoff is trying to propose to Anna, but, like, he keeps getting sidetracked because of various things and Olaf and whatever getting in the way. And so, like, the fact that Anna is really, really into, like, trying to figure out what's going on with her sister and trying to help her sister and kind of ignoring Kristoff, I think. To me, Anna's basicness works in this.
Yeah,
I think it's fine to have one very flamboyant character who is Elsa and Olaf, I guess, and then everyone else around them kind of hovering.
It's true. It's true. And you know, when you talk about how flamboyant Elsa is, this takes you back to Let It Go.
Mm-hmm.
And as we have already heard on this episode, you know, Let It Go is sort of the song that really stuck from the first Frozen, particularly in terms of it became kind of emblematic of that film. You can feel, and this is where we're going to talk about Into the Unknown, you can feel an effort, as it were, to reproduce Let It Go. Is that fair to say, Glenn?
It is fair to say. We've got a clip of the second chorus, which is basically just Idina Menzel, the great Idina Menzel.
The great,
just repeating the title three times.
Yeah.
She does it in slightly different ways each time, so let's hear a little bit of that.
Into the Unknown.
Okay, that's fine. That's nice. Perfectly fine.
Into the
unknown. Oh, a little step ladder. She goes up. Nice.
Into the unknown.
Yes. Well, this is the first. Here's the first thought I had. And again, great. It's not her. It's not even necessarily, I don't think, anything wrong with the song. It's just that the song is maybe overworking its effort to reproduce that success. And my first thought when I was listening to that was like, boy, if you enjoyed your tuneless toddler trying to sing Let It Go, get ready for your tuneless toddler trying to sing Into the Unknown.
I went very similarly. I went to, oh my God, karaoke nights just got so much worse. People are going to hurl themselves at that note.
You know what this is? This is the part of the national anthem.
Oh my God, exactly.
With the rocket's red glare, you know, it's sort of like, are you going to make it?
There are going to be so many face plants when they try to hit that note. And it's because everybody thinks they're Idina Menzel, but everybody turns out to be a
Well, exactly.
Zoom. Exactly.
It's going to be like watching a skater attempt the triple axel. It's like, are you going to fall? Probably. And it's the same thing with that note.
Kids on playgrounds across the country are going to be, like, singing that at recess. And, like, in 2 months' time, school nurses are going to be Googling vocal node.
Yeah,
it's
go ahead,
crazy.
Lindsay.
One thing that I was thinking about when, obviously, first of all, Let It Go, Into the Unknown, there's, like, a weird slant rhyme there. So, first of all, it's never going to leave my head. But I'm curious to see if the Idina Menzel version gets this pickup, because with Let It Go, there was initially a push for the Demi Lovato version, and it just never took off. It was like this modified pop version. But we stayed through the credits, and when you stay through the credits, you get the Panic at the Disco version. And man, Brendan Urie has really like put a dagger through my heart, my A Fever You'll Never Sweat Out black eyeliner wearing heart. A little bit about my own history there this year. It is so cloying, and I just could not want to leave the theater any more than watching those credits roll.
Yeah.
I'm glad I missed that. I left before that happened.
How did you feel about Into the Unknown there, Aisha?
See, even though it's very obviously Let It Go Part 2, It is by far the best song of the movie, I think. Her second song, which visually feels like Let It Go Part 2, her second solo, I think it's called Show Yourself.
Yes,
or
it
it's
is.
Not a solo. Uh-huh. It's like it starts off with her and she, by herself, and then her mother starts duetting with her. And the visually, that one is just like she changes. She's in like this beautiful gown again, and she's swaying her hair, and there's like ice everywhere. And I was like, oh, this looks just like Let It Go in the first movie. But I couldn't tell you what the song like, sounds like.
I don't remember any of that song. There were a couple different songs where I thought the complexity of the music that those composers are capable of writing kind of got in the way of it being catchy enough for maybe a cartoon, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think their writing is pretty developed and advanced. But the great thing about Let It Go was that it was it found that balance where it was also really super hummable, which I think Into the Unknown is maybe the one that's the closest. And this is maybe what Aisha is saying, too. The closest to hitting that balance where, like, it's an interesting song, but it's also super hummable as long as you don't have to be listened to by anyone.
Oh, my God. My theory is that it's not going to, like, knock Let It Go off the cultural perch. Mm. Not because of what it sounds like, but because of what its function is. Let It Go happens about the midway point in the movie. It's the second act turn where she is. It's a quasi-feminist anthem of claiming one's power and rejecting society's, you know, rigid expectations. Into the Unknown is a I Want song. It happens much earlier in the film. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that sense of power. It has the sense of questioning, of something unfinished. So I don't think a kid is going to feel that same identification of just, like, stamping and having, like, the ice go all over the place and, like, and saying the cold never bothered me anyway. This is about feeling like you're not done yet. Yeah. And I don't know if it's going to have the same power.
Well, let us know what you think about Frozen 2. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants, and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
Support also comes from the new Netflix podcast, The Crown, the official podcast. British broadcaster Edith Bowman delves deep into the corresponding episode of the Netflix series and pulls back the curtain on how the show gets made from script to screen. Creator Peter Morgan, The Crown researchers, costume team, and more share their experiences filming the third season. The Crown podcast is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts, with new episode drops every Monday and Thursday.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
I mentioned this Twitter account in the newsletter a couple weeks back when I did it. It is at Scary Toilet. And the name of the actual the tag is Toilets with Threatening Auras, A-U-R-A-S. And it is such a perfect tiny little Twitter feed because it's exactly what it says it is, right? It's pictures of toilets. And it's not gross toilets, to be fair. And it's not, like, disgusting. And it's not, like, scary, scary. It is exactly what it says. Threatening, as in disquieting, as in you would go into some of them are private. Most of them are public because, come on, you would go into a restroom, see this toilet and Bartleby and be, I would prefer not to. And back the hell out. And it's a really a nice variety of kinds of threatening auras.
In toilets.
In toilets. So that is at Scary Toilet.
And for more like that, you can subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And you would have known about this weeks ago. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Lindsay McKenna, what is making you happy this week?
All right, so I got to stick with pop culture centered around sisterhood. So earlier this week, Haim completed their trilogy of singles. I'm calling that a trilogy of singles.
Sure.
For those that, you know, maybe aren't as familiar with the Haim sisters of Esty, Danielle, and Alana, they released Something to Tell You back in 2017. It didn't get quite the same acclaim as their debut, Days Are Gone, but I'm a huge defender of that LP. I love it. Since then, they brought Lizzo on tour, they headlined Pitchfork Music Festival, and then they started releasing these singles this year. In July, they released Summer Girl, this lovely summertime balm. It's a summer breeze. Oh, it's so beautiful. In October, they followed it up with Now I'm In It, which comes with sort of this backstory of, you know, combating depression and sort of working through those emotional problems that one might encounter. And now, earlier this week, we got Hallelujah. Again, like, we got a Haim single for every season. It is so lovely. They all come with accompanying videos from Paul Thomas Anderson. It's an intimate track. It's really beautiful. Everything, of course, with Haim comes back to LA, and you've got these beautiful visuals of them walking. I just love this band. I love this trilogy. I am so grateful to have this.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Lindsay McKenna. Some videos and music from Haim. Aisha Harris, what is making you happy this week?
In keeping with the Disney theme, I am very happy that the Disney Plus channel, which I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably have it because apparently 10 million people subscribe to it.
Yeah.
But I'm really happy that the service includes a lot of super old Disney cartoons that have not been previously available for streaming, including The Three Little Pigs, Steamboat Willie, a lot of classic Mickey Mouse cartoons. You could find them on YouTube illegally and other places, but it's nice to have them all in one spot. Disney Plus is not perfect, but I think that if you have kids and you want them to watch something that isn't necessarily, you know, something made in the last 5 years, you want to give them a little bit of culture, I highly recommend checking them out. You might have a hard time finding them unless you know the titles of them because, again, Disney Plus is not perfect and the algorithms are very weird for searching. But definitely recommend Three Little Pigs, Steamboat Willie, and any other Mickey Mouse cartoons.
Oh, thank you very much, Aisha Harris. What is making me happy this week? I was poking around on my Roku device, which is a set-top box similar to an Apple TV or whatever, and discovered the Bon Appetit channel. And also there's a Bon Appetit channel on YouTube. So if you don't have a Roku or an Apple TV or whatever, you can just find these on YouTube. And I started watching a show that they have called Gourmet Makes. And it is hosted by a pastry chef named Claire Saffitz. And what she does is she tries to make a homemade gourmet version of snack foods. Like, she tries to make, like, how would I make Doritos? How would I make? And it's not like how would I make, you know, but instead of Doritos, it's like a sophisticated chip with, like, she's trying to make Doritos. Like, how do I make it very much like Doritos? And originally, they were focusing a little bit more on making a nicer version. Now they're really mostly focused on, like, really trying to duplicate it without, of course, the industrial equipment that goes into making stuff like that, because she's in the test kitchen at Bon Appetit. So she will try to make, for example, one of the really tough ones was making M&Ms, because how do you get the candy shell on the M&M? They're the length of, like, a TV show. Like, they would be a TV show on, like, Food Network or something like that if they had gone that direction. Some of them just take forever to figure out because they're so complicated and every single thing that she tries goes awry. They're really fun. She's in that test kitchen where they're surrounded by a lot of other, like, Bon Appetit figures who kind of come in and out. They're so much fun, and I had so much fun watching them. I got really addicted to them over the weekend and just kind of let them run. So the Bon Appetit channel, and especially Gourmet Makes and Reverse Engineering, which is the Food by Taste one, really love those two shows, and could not be happier that I discovered it. And that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can find Aisha Harris at Crafting My Style. You can find Lindsay at Lindsay McKay. That's LYNDSEYMCK. You can follow our producer, Emmanuel Johnson, at Emmanuel_speaks. You can find our other producer, Jessica Reedy, as always, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, do subscribe to that newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all right back here next week.
How do you make an older parent struggling with health problems happy?
I tell him I was getting engaged to a war photographer and that he and I just bought a parakeet named Gino.
This week on NPR's Invisibilia, what happens when the roles we're used to performing with our loved ones get mixed up?